extraordinary thing about people. That's the extraordinary thing about people. They all grow up. The little girl with glasses and curly hair, standing at the gate, talking to passers-by. Then pop! She's an old maid, cleaning her niece's glasses and placing them delicately on. Remembering Daddy, trying to remove the smudges from her hair and wondering, where have the years gone? Thank you.
Peter Lucy, he's ready.
Yep.
He is ready. Peter Lucy. This is a poem by Thomas McCarthy. It's from Cork and right here 2 weeks ago. It's called Well Look at You. First part is called Correspondence. We make love after a long journey through the Sunday newspapers. Our bed shakes with the crackle of the news. Observer, Tribune, Indo, and Business Post. How far apart we were while gathering such news. Our stories for each other went astray, like colour supplements. You've always been my favourite reading. A columnist who covered all our love lives. Mary Welch Hemingway of the Heart. See how copy editing you makes me lyrical. Changing all contents to listen to your port. Not the knowledge, but the colour. Not the bare fact, but the fact bare. And this pays the advertisement, your voyager's kiss. Second part, which is called Your Ordinary Jest. By the time I reached the kitchen full of the most ordinary longing, thinking how we might extract ourselves from this life, how we might find a place together in an unfashionable county, like Offaly, for example, or maybe the southern part of Carlow. Somewhere less complex than a busy city, where the new pups and the tree cats can wander freely. At this stage, if I could have you and you only, I'd go on the road. No question about it. Come with me, girl. During the war, I dreamt only of the two of us. Thinking thus, I smelled your Dunn's Brothers coffee brewing. And I caught you before you became self-conscious, unselfconsciously polishing your black shoes. Dressed formally for work. Let me tell you how that was. How perfect you looked. The third part is called Oranges. You broke the blender with too much spinning. It sits on the drain board in shreds of afterthought about doing dangerous things with you. I saw the way you force-fed it with oranges from Seville. You as athletic and young as any Crawford Park schoolgirl. Where oranges need for you, I make a simple temporary bed. A ledge where I drink the fresh juice. You made that gulping treat. Exhausted lamp in our ceiling, scattered rinds of bed clothes. I'm going to finish here. There's three more parts. One, but I'm not going to read them.
Number 3A, as she insisted on being, is called Mary O'Connell.
Verse has a very short time span, so I'm giving it again because in a few weeks' time it will have no more relevance, I hope. Crackdown in the Commons. The Telegraph has dished the dirt on miscreant MPs who made a slipping fortune switching houses with such ease. It pulled the plug on Jackie Smith, who faced the voter scorn Especially when she charged them for her hobbies, TV, porn. Shadiq Malik, Elliot Morley, and the well-named Davis Chater were suspended from the Commons and may face the music later. The Michael Martin cover-up could not be put to bed. But still, 300 years ago, the speaker lost his head. Though British taxpayers were being fleeced, what just jumped in their throat was when Douglas, going the whole hog, had them billed to clean his moat. Then Margaret Moran got the state to pay for the dry rot that showed up in her seaside home, not thinking she'd be caught. We had Gordon Brown on YouTube. Was he trying to pull our leg? His drastic cutback measures panicked Cameron and Clay. For Tories and Lib Democrats are no way in the clear. Sir Michael Spicer comes to mind when he cleaned his chandelier. Two Tories claimed for separate homes, but what made people shudder was when they learnt that these two tops were married to each other. Oh, Alistair darling, it's such a shame you made that bad mistake. As Chancellor, you should hold the line and not be on the make. It would take too long to list out all the members linked to fraud, Gerard Kaufman, Barbara Follett, Hazel Blairs, and Frances Maud. They say they were not paid enough and therefore had to cheat. But this brazen daylight robbery is pretty hard to beat.
I'm not going to put your second in, but trying to pronounce it, so can we get it right?
How's it going? Do them three short poems. First one is it's a poem of immigration. It's called French's Key. Ah, number one, St. Dominic's Terrace. Place of open heart, fresh start, watershed. Clear and confused, used and unused. Tin of a whistle, giggle of kids. Velux windows overlooking private bits. Sing song of the accent, smell of the sea, and number one St. Dominic's Terrace, you'll make a good home for me. This next one is called Conversation with a Prospective Employer in the English Market. 50 quid a day, is it? And how many hours will there be? Sure, 10 and a half hours a day, only. See you through, says he. 10 and a half hours a day, says I. How many breaks will there be? Sure, you can stop at the top of the shop to take yourself some tea. And what with some safety gear to make me as safe as can be? Sure, there's an old pair of boots you'd suit, the same one suiting me. 10 and a half hours a day, says I. 10 and a half, says he. Sure, 50 quid, an old pair of boots. It's not enough for me. So I must go and travel now this green and pleasant isle in search of an employer without avarice or guile. But I doubt that I will find one, so and I cry into my beer. To be leading a Catholic country is epidemic here. We'll do one more. I'm sure you've all experienced this. All you poets have experienced this at some point. Once telling people your poetry, write a poem about me. So this is a poem for Claire. When I thought about Claire, I thought about my sister, and I thought about these other sisters, the poor Claires. And I remember the time from when I was small, when I would visit that quiet building behind that high wall to purchase my eggs from the women in black. Money given was a blessing, and a blessing came back. But I don't see you as a poor Claire. I see you more as an expensive Claire with indomitable spirit and scary bear. A gentle soul, but with a fierce flash of eyes, you can do whatever you like, girl. So fly.
Woo!
This is a short one called Green Lane. Fixes on the black and red lights, knock off the soul speed from strobe lighting, in a world made of yellow. I watch smoke spread through the veins of the black doors. It's okay that no one else knows. Sacred Heart. We have made no promises. Your fingers stroked my face and hair as if they could heal sickness. But we have made no promises. We have made no promises. Though we talked of others, I felt my fingers had made new train tracks on your skin. But we have made no promises. We have made no promises. Your hand slipped from mine like a blade of white below the waves. The fire I lit burned out before the one you stoked in me did. We have made no promises. We have made no promises. And you'll never know that I keep your ashes in a drawer, my cigarette still burning. Sacred Heart and Wall has been. This is called Man and Buck. With his black hole eyes glazed over with blue skies, he removes some of the days they grieve on his ear, from where outside had tried to reach the inside. I scribble down notes from a white coat system, as if I could ever heal him, stitch the feathers of a broken angel's wing. Clutches his rosary beads from which he is hung, a puppet dangling from another world, his head and limbs spread on their strings. A beautiful girl talks on phone in an unknown language. He speaks to himself in foreign tongues, a direct line to God. Stamps out cigarette butts so his God's world won't catch fire. Was he sane once, sane like Sacharib? Did he go about his business both feet on the ground, till he broke against some crystal altar, a bright halo set spark to his unearthly fires? With his black hole eyes, glazed over like blue skies, he removed some of the day's debris from his ear, from where outside had tried to reach the inside.
Misadventures, the tawdry memories of experience. It's not enough that I'm civilized up to the point. You beckon. Your sexual veracity finding is right to home, especially in your last solitude. The curtain's aperture records the moment's division, so it's not for me to remember. So I say, is it worth wearing chains around my neck and wrist? Even if they are silver, our beauty is useless, and so am I. By the sixth one, as you probably know, the last survivor of the Titanic disaster died last couple of days. and well, I walked there a couple of months ago, so kind of certain properties were. It's called a clipping ship. The access urine to be discovered and noticed. Maybe not all the alternatives have the swift mainstream. Maybe he is the last of the noble savages, the sole survival of an unsinkable liner on a raggedy Atlantic coast. Standing on the burning deck, he refused to dance, since he was no part of this world. But listen. The laughter which greeted our compadres is now become our mother tongue. Dogs unleashed on prisoners from war many times. Ha! Well then, never mind. Throw them in with the rest. I've no use of them. It's a rope untied. Let the boat sail away like the sunset. And the sun drowned slowly in the quagmire of twilight. Rose red Julesses will walk on the shore and see how the ship looks, like crystal, sailing to conviction. Nobody here walks a tank. No hornpipe commemorates that there's actually something in the sad arrival of our rural craft. Thank you.
And the reigning 5-word champion, John Ryan.
Hi, this is another one of the seasonal based ones that's sort of time specific and it's sort of out of season slightly, but we just suspend imagination.
I think it's beneath us.
Thanks, Paul. Yeah. Follow on from the forlorn residue of summer, turning again towards the coming tide that traces in slyly when we are waiting for something to happen. Holding on to the dredges of the holiday, fruit drinks destined to have been long consumed by now. Grasping days from the end of mid-year into the fall capriciously and for appearance sake. Caressing nervous sunbeams at dusk, stretching out the ounces less than the bones of a month. Heckling the moon as it meanders until it comes to a stop, elucidating its role as the clock of human misery and destiny.
Now next up we have David Rowe.
Hi everyone, I'm from the States, so this is my first time reading in Ireland. And it was Walt Whitman's birthday yesterday. Here's Walt Whitman, Izzy Bongo, and that's a Zulu praise poem. Walt Whitman, he who supped with the queen and then dumpster dove for dessert. Walt Whitman, irrepressible one who did hard time for humping live oaks. Walt Whitman, he who slept with both eyes open for fear he'd miss something. He who knew the business end of both a horse's bridle and a bridal party. He who filled his autograph book with names you never heard of. Walt Whitman, he whose picture still smiles on the cover of my hardback Leaves of Grass after I inadvertently shellacked it with lawnmower grass. Walt Whitman, he whose teeth the kids are skipping on the river, whose hair is the volcano's capillary lava, whose nose is the sundial's gnomon, whose nose grease lubricates the gears of every timepiece, whose neck is the neck of an electric guitar, whose words burst ink pens like temple veins, whose beard stuffs the seat cushions of convertibles. he who procreated in the back of his ambulance, he who barroom brawled just to see the joy run red, Walt Whitman, damner of torpedoes, tickler of hell's bells, he of the cracker barrel cosmology, Walt Whitman. Walt Whitman, hirsute patron of the whorehouse who sat the girls on his lap and asked them what they wanted for Christmas. Walt Whitman himself, the giver of geological blowjobs. He who sat up front and talked the bus driver's ear off. He who emulated the holy dung beetle. Walt Whitman, who some critics claim wrote only one poem. Who I say wrote only one letter. Oh, thank you
These are three unrelated political, kind of political observations, and they're technically haiku, but, well, we'll leave it at that. First one. I'm sorry if you've heard any of these before. If Windscale does a Chernobyl, you will never, ever spell it to you. Second one is Irish history. The English should remember, the Irish forget. Third one, if I remember it. Oh yeah, of course. Very topical. The politicians. Why? How come they're always there? How come they're always there when they need us, like?
Now we have Christy Parker.
Thanks. Okay. For no particular reason, I'm just going to do two poems. And for no particular reason, they're about alcohol. Not because during the weekends and the weather and stuff like that. So I'm just going to read these two very serious poems about alcohol. And they're actually derived at Rapid Temple Minute. From this selection of poems that I produced myself, and it's called Don't Step in the Poems, and it's about how one runs with, and I don't know who she is. This poem, I don't know if any of you have liked in Yall, I come from Yall, it's now 30 miles away from Yall, it's a beautiful place, she was, and now we can't back her down the beach, wasn't it, and because there's enough caps for you to stay up or somehow with her, but anyhow, they're trying their best, so if you grab Yall any time, remember that I warned you about the cap happening. That's not a poem, by the way, it's just made up in my head, it's a thing, yeah. Anyway, there's something like 33 or something poems in your, and each one of them is in this poem. I'll be there with you. It might go up your head a little bit because you wouldn't be familiar with the names, but I think you might get the gist of the feeling anyway, in any case. It's called A Sick Man. He seemed in some distress when he called round to my door. I need a place to sit, he said. I feel a little poor. I let him in and straight away could see he was unwell. The what was he suffered from was a little hard to tell. He had a running nosebleed, like a little cup. Yeah, pour it into that, he said, sitting and mopping up. A bulging boy's blood like a bull compressed against his collar, and when he tried to turn his neck, he gave a painful holler. His skin was sort of yellow, and his eyes were green bit red. His breath smelled like a dozen cats that have been 3 weeks dead. His voice was low and raspy, and his teeth were green and brown. Until he put him in his pocket, he looked like Shane McGowan. His eyes were rolling in his head, and he said his stomach hurt, and a centipede enjoyed a feed of puke that stained his shirt. Like a little shiny crust of pie running slowly down his face. His hands were shaking, his body quaking, his skin was flaking, that was making noises like a storm breaking. He was chain smoking, in bed and choking, with every word I had spoken, the good Lord's name, he wasn't spoken. You look a little rough, I said, if I may say so, mate. He shook his head, and then he said, I got a bad point.
Oh,
Possibly a porter in the porterhouse, maybe why I look so sugar. Or perhaps some chap gave me some crap while I was in the dock. The one that's the enemy to blame is down to Michael Farrell, a big club all is but a point they're from a legal barrel. The two I downed in Thailand may have brought me to my knees, but for all I know it could have been the first one in JD's. Well, the dinner herns amongst the ferns, I got the brutal jar, though I said it on steady apple two from Eddie and Tom McCarthy's bar. But the five I had in Mackey's could also have caused this. Then again, when down in Jimmy Brown's, I may have drank some piss. I hit the chair and tights besides, everything planted in between, before I marched across the road for a few in the marine. The rugby club was open too, and I threw back two or three. Surely, God forbid, the golf club did not do this to me. I had three or four in the red store. I was in Berkeley's when I fell, and I shot my face in the usual place, and in the Keys as well. Could Moby Dick's have made me sick, or Walter Raleigh does? Well, it's nowhere else. It must have been the odd end then, I suppose. And then he said, it isn't fair, that they should all be blamed. That's why the dodgy public house must be both named and shamed. I'll be all right with that kind of shite, and I'm going out again tonight. I may get blasted, but I'll find a bastard who sabotaged my skite. I took his hand and said I'd planned to have a quiet night in. But if he was out to save the town, then he could count me in. We'll find a tap that's pouring crap and make the Nandor take the rap, and if it takes someone to do, by Christ, we'll be it true. Around we may as well finish it, I suppose. By the way, that poem is illustrated in the book as well, a lot of them are. More glory than we see in pictures. Anyway, if we don't know about the book, so I think, of course, trained in modern Ireland nowadays, we've become so sophisticated, we drink at home in our houses. I mean, by the couple of chosen neighbours around, people who look good have jobs, or used to have jobs just about 6 months ago, and we indulge in the ability of our own quarters. And of course, at the end of the week, at the end of the night in some cases, you have to bring the fucking Adam down to the bottle bank. The bottle bank blues. Don't bring your empty bottles to the bottle bank by day. Wait until the dark of night for putting them away. For all your empty ciders and your stouts and vodka blue may lead some nosy neighbour to think the worst of you. I was depositing some glassware from a cardboard box or tree when a woman with a carrier bag stopped and stared at me. And as she watched me separate the dark ones from the clear, she pursed her lips and shook her head and muttered, "Dear, oh dear." I was tossing bottles through the hole in environmental haste, proud in my heart to do my part in recycling mankind's waste. I had 6 parties in 10 months of drinking moderation, but she nearby with a caustic eye saw a different situation. She stepped a little closer and in a scalding way said, "You seem to have a problem, sir. Ever tried AA?" You won't believe how good they are until after you have tried. This started up my husband a week before he died. I know you think the worst, they said, but you're making a mistake. I see you're in denial, she goes. That's a big mistake to make. Look how flies have gathered and are buzzing round your breath. You really should be helped, you know. It isn't too late yet. I hurled the bottles faster as she stood there with her frown. 34, 35, 36. She counted each one counting down. I see you like your whiskey. I heard her voice quiver. That's bad enough, but gin as well, may God protect your liver. He said a vodka and a rum, in with the ginger ales. And I picked those Guinness and the wines to tell some sorry tales. Every drop of every bottle once went in your mouth and trickled through to most of you until it came back out. There's enough to fill 5 bathtubs, and each one 3 feet deep. And that would baptize 6 large towns and 10 dozen sheep. Not to mention all the cans of beer that would help quench your thirst. They'll send you to an early grave, so the drafts might kill you first. She warned me of the perils of internal irrigation, where alcohol can bring gut rot and 10 years of constipation. She told me of her brother friend who always loved his drink, and how his wife abandoned him for a man who preferred milk. Also, boil, shake and sweat, these things I could expect. Lost brain cells, body smells, red eyes, lost respect, hallucinations, palpitations, veins about the pop. Stinky spread appears like dead if my drinking didn't stop. My ears were sore, and what is more, my heart had been deflated by the fears of drinking beer this woman had created. I scooped her up, and as she kicked, ignored her finger wagging, I aimed her for the hole, and then I threw in my last naked.
Someone's
of straw for that tree. Next up is your team.
Good evening. I'm glad I didn't say anything funny this evening. There's too much competition. So I'm reading a little from my ghost story. It's called Aunt Emily's Secret, and it's about two boys who lost their parents in a car crash, and they're going to stay, so they believe of her Aunt Emily. I write to Aunt Emily. I ask if we might possibly stay with her for the time being. I'm thinking we could go to the boarding school, the one our grandfather went to years ago. There's some money left over from the sale of the house, I write to her. The solicitor will be putting it in some kind of trust fund, and it can be used to pay towards my school fees and our school fees and expenses. As soon as I finish writing the letter, I call Darren. He has a kind of ironic smirk on his face as I read it to him, as if it's all just a waste of time. He trudges reluctantly after me to the post office to get a stamp. We're lucky to have anyone at all, I call back to him as we make our way back down Appleton Close. I haven't heard of Aunt Emily in years, he says. Mam and Dad never mentioned her. Even Grandad looked down at the floor whenever a name was mentioned. I thought she was... His voice fades as he glances at me. What? You thought she was what? I don't know. I just always thought she was dead. Of course she's not dead, stupid. Mom and Dad would have told us if she was dead. But the truth is that there is a doubt at the back of my mind. I don't remember seeing Aunt Emily at the funeral. She's been away in England for years, that's all, I say. Anyway, if she's not there to meet us at the station, we can walk to the house. What if she's not there? What if there's no one there in the house? He persists like a dog with a bone. We can get in through a window or something and wait until she comes. Darren frowns, clearly not satisfied with this arrangement. I frown back at him, irritated. What do you suggest we do, Darren? Hang around here in Appleton Road until the child catcher returns to take us to the orphanage? I didn't see her at the funeral either, says Darren. That was strange. She was probably somewhere at the back and you didn't notice her, I say uneasily. Did you see her, he asks, looking directly at me. No, I don't know. The truth is I can't really remember. The whole day of the funeral is just a blur to me now. Maybe it's the lingering effects of grief or concussion or shock. Anytime I try to remember details from the last few weeks, all sorts of memories tumble through my mind from years ago, running up helter-skelter over each other like wreckage being deposited on the seashore. There was such a crowd at the funeral. Nearly everyone from Appleton Close was there, and half of Mangerton Avenue too. Lots of pupils wearing the red school uniforms, and some friends and colleagues and Mam and Dad all saying how sad it was, and all coming up to shake our hands. None of it seemed real somehow. And anyway, it's all faded like music now into a great distance. The train jolts suddenly and hurts me back in my mind to the accident. Feel again the shock. Hear the crunching noise at the front of the car is squashed up like a coke can. Time stands still. For a split second, but strangely doesn't seem able to end. There is a ghastly silence. I feel I'm in a science fiction movie, trapped in a space vehicle of some sort, strapped, immobile, paralyzed, heading into a nothingness. There is a feeling of shock in the air, a ringing silence, and nothing is moving. Nothing will ever move again until the sickening slow motion of bodies leaning forward and returning to their seats, out of joint, and flecks of blood on the glass, and then it's streaming. Flashbacks are terrible, but the nightmares I've been having are infinitely more disturbing. I really take this pit. I wake up sweating. Sure, I can hear voices. I lift my head from the pillow, listening intently. I'm in my bedroom in Appleton Close. I throw frozen white sheets of size and fright and stumbled barefoot over the cold floor to the window to stare out into the stormy night, sure that the voices I heard were those of Mom and Dad. I think I see them. Or at least two forms of vaguely resemble them, standing down in the garden looking under my window. Their mouths keep opening as if they are calling to me, trying to tell me something, but I cannot. I imagine they're trying to say goodbye. After many efforts, they lose hope and turn reluctantly, sadly away beneath the chestnut trees in the moonlight. And my mother always turns, stops, turns around again, looking desperately for me. And as my mother comes back for her and puts his arm around her shoulders, I can see the tears in her eyes. Sometimes they remain longer in the garden, wander around the house for a while, just looking for a way to get in. Sometimes they come right up to the house and I catch a glimpse of their eyes and draw back in shock. Then I think that perhaps it is just a trick of the moonlight, but when I look again and see it again, I know now what has disturbed me. There is something harder, something cold in their eyes, something I don't recognize. I gaze down at them as if I might be able to see what lies behind the hardness, to see into their warm hearts again and understand what they are trying silently to reveal to me. Perhaps that they love me and Darren and will be watching over us all night.
Now we have two pop sets and you've got a minute and a half each. So we have Seamus Harrington. The wash. It bobs and turns turtle without a single bubble, dancing past my transom, a fairy liquid bottle. And I'm honored to be mentioned in the poem of Joyce. I didn't know about it, but I think it's this one. You can tell me it now. On Nantucket. Don't move, whispers the maid. On your collar. I feel nothing. Light as confetti. The warbler slips onto my tongue. A cobweb claw. Light as the breeze. Shoot. Too late. After the push bit, rest a while. Crumbs and waters hold no sway. No, except on this leg. Focus. Gone again. Adios. Landfall to the north. Is a ladybird speck in the lens between the gastries. And by Joyce said, you couldn't make that up. This is when it happens that it happens. The race. Speck on the ocean. In the single-handed race, a one-armed yachtsman. Open mic for Joyce. Leave politics outside the door. You and your tree-hugging wimps. Rent-a-crowd cynics. Staying PC is no concern of mine. You darken this doorway again with your skeptics and mink-loving lefties, sandals and pot, and I'll unleash my own heckler and kosh. You are here, after Joey. The mess room falls away astern. He juggles papers in a rush, bounding up the companionway, keeping to the navigable channel on the right. Lights and spheres are revisited. The class work groups huddled over almanacs and symbols. Parallel rulers and dividers wink at the ready. Handouts of celestial navigation make a transit of the chart room. Now before we get our bearings, a scuttle. One of the hands has hit the deck, faint. A blip of pulse. polar faced, no inclination to take a sip of liquid, he is shipped out by his mates, 997, falling slowly. At 14:13 on Midsummer's Day, we undertake the tricky crossing of the busy sea corridor at the National Maritime College. Visibility, good. A card is swiped. We swing through double doors to B block, the third waypoint. Then leaving the fountain to port, we head straight on. The sick bay lies due west. Conditions, moderating. Survivors mustered at a death point in horror. Adrift in the foggy flotsam of dog-eared Admiralty charts, tables of magnetic variation, instruments of exactitude, listless angles of declination, a page from the lost logbook of Christopher Columbus. Finish with this. The pharmacy. We'll be more careful. We care most for the needy. We dispense with care.
The final poet on our list tonight is Wes Walsh.
It's called A Map of the World. Acupuncture points and local stimulation, flat screen TVs and stupid conversation, track suits and trash talk, love it or leave it. The world is insane and we don't believe it. For phases, a map of the world is a map of the world. You can see she's a beautiful girl, she's a beautiful girl. Whorish teenagers throng the convenience stores. Dog-like faces caked in makeup. Legs provocatively propped up on stiletto heels. Tight derrieres wrapped in little confetti skirts with the glare of fluorescent lights like television cameras on their cheap, thrill-seeking flesh. Acupuncture points and local stimulation, flat screen TVs and stupid conversation, track suits and trash talk, love it or leave it. The world is insane and we don't perceive it. Everything around her is a silver pool of light. Piles of containerized freight surrounding reservoirs of oil or natural gas. Secularism gone insane and no longer held to task. Cattle gently cut the grass with their impressive front teeth. Logical fallacies please the elite. Reliquaries of dust infested with worms. Sacred Heart of Jesus has been solemnly enthroned in this home on the first day of June 2009 by the consecration to him of all the members of the family, present or absent, living or dead. By this act of love and reparation, we desire to recognize Jesus as our Lord and Master. We accept in their entirety the commandments of God and of His Holy Church. We express our horror at the sacrilegious violation of His sovereign rights by individuals, by families, and nations. We condemn all attacks upon the holy laws of Christian marriage, and finally we submit with our whole heart and mind to the authority of the Roman Pontiff, our Holy Father, the Pope.